Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
And we're live, pal.
All right, we're live. Welcome to the UFC on ESPN 13 post-fight show here on the MMAfighting.com YouTube page. I am Mike Heck. That is Jose Youngs. We have Casey Lydon in the truck providing us your comments and questions about tonight's event. And the headliner, Calvin Kattar defeats Dan Ige via unanimous decision. Jose, I thought Kattar won four of the five rounds. I thought two of the judges got it right. I'm not mad about 48-47, but we'll get to Kattar in a moment. But thoughts on Dan Ige's effort tonight in his first main event? I thought he served himself very well tonight.
Yeah, it's one of those performances where we talked about this on the A side. He loses half of his fight check because technically he did lose. But it's one of those performances where he grew in the eyes of the fans and probably with the UFC matchmakers, where, including myself, I thought he lost to Edson Barbosa. And then I thought Calvin Kattar was just maybe a notch above him in terms of skill and maybe talent. So I knew Dan Ige was an uber talented, tough fighter. I just thought Calvin Kattar was above a league above him. And my God, Dan Ige proved me wrong. He looked every bit like he belonged in there with the upper echelon of the featherweight division. I thought Calvin Kattar was came out looking unbelievable. His boxing was looking super crisp. He was just looking that straight, that cross right or left. I can't remember, digging to the body, stuffing takedowns. But Dan Ige just never went away. He stayed in there the entire fight, and showed he belonged. Like, even when he was taking damage, he was still pressing forward. He was still shooting for takedowns. He was making adjustments, switching stances and everything. So hats off to Dan Ige for proving me wrong and proving that he does deserve these big matchups in the featherweight division.
I agree. Calvin Kattar gets the job done, gets another victory. He moves up in the featherweight momentum department. No doubt about that. He's clearly one of the top 45ers in the world. There's no doubt about that. And something about Kattar, when you watch him fight, it's almost like terrifying to watch him fight. Right. He just looks for those openings and he just throws with such ferocity. But Dan Ige, tougher than a $3 steak that you find in Las Vegas. Unbelievable tonight. But you know, what'd you think overall of Calvin Kattar's performance? Because I think most people thought that as the fight progressed, maybe once you got into the championship rounds, Kattar would probably be able to finish Dan Ige, but that wasn't the case. Ige proved his toughness, but Kattar comes out and has a pretty solid performance. What did you think of it overall?
Yeah, like I said at the beginning, I've been super impressed with Calvin Kattar's, specifically his boxing and every fight. I think I think now more people are starting to come around, but forever I would just pray. I would tell people, like, watch this featherweight boxing. It's unbelievable. And in a division with strikers like Jose Aldo and Max Holloway and even the Korean Zombie, you get like these uber flashy, talented, slick strikers. And then here's this kid from New England, which is stellar, crisp, technical boxing that is just such a joy to watch. So he looked unbelievable in the first two rounds, like I said, and Dan Ige just stayed there and just stuck to his game plan and adjusted and just gave, I don't want to say he frustrated Calvin, but he just proved to be more difficult to put away than I think a lot of us thought. And I kind of figured as the fight was going on that Calvin's power just, I think, kind of played a huge factor at the end, where maybe they were like Dan Ige and him were kind of neck and neck going in. Calvin Kattar was, of course, maybe a step ahead, but not like he was running away and Dan Ige was making adjustments and staying in there. But I think by the fourth and fifth round, his output was matched by his power, and I think that kind of was the turning point where it seems like he would step in, and then his last punch would just be huge. It's like that Diaz style of fighting where the whole fight they're doing like 30, 40, 50% all these strikes, and then by the fourth and fifth round, instead of doing 30, 40, 50, they're like 60, 70, 80, and then their last punch is 100, and then that proves to be the it's like killing you with mosquito bites and then a bomb at the end of it. And I think that's what Calvin Kattar really showed in the end, and it proved to be successful because he emerged victorious. He got the W in Abu Dhabi. I can't hear you.
Oh, lost you, Mike.
Sorry. The reason why is there's one fly just buzzing around the command center right now, and it's driving me crazy. And it was buzzing like right around here, and I didn't want to start smacking things and have it on. But what do you do with Calvin Kattar right now? Because this is such a tough division to match make, especially up the top, because there's five guys ranked above Kattar right now. Four of them are rumored to be matched up, but nothing is on the books and nothing is official right now. So the only guy that might be available over the next few months, if these other fights get made, is Max Holloway. Could that even be a possibility right now? Like, what can we do from here?
And like, that fight is a fight. I just don't know if the UFC wants to book that. I mean, I know Calvin Kattar would want that fight. I'm sure Max Holloway would take that fight because he's one of those guys that are just down to scrap. But I don't think the UFC will make that fight. It's similar to when you have Callum Chookagian and all of a sudden Jessica Ai emerges, not Jessica Ai, Cynthia Calvillo emerges as this legit contender, and now she, all of a sudden you feed her the number one contender, and then you lose, and then all of a sudden you have someone that's already lost the championship right where she was while she knocks off of a contender. So I don't know if they give Calvin Kattar the Holloway fight. There's a ton of fights for him to take. The Yair Rodriguez is rumored to fight Zabit. I know Calvin beat Zabit, so if Yair wins, maybe you run that one. Korean Zombie, Brian Ortega, which you know I want to see that fight more than any other fight on planet Earth. But him and Korean Zombie and Alexander Volkanovski have been going back and forth, kind of chipping away. And whenever the champion in any division has a name on his lips and he's kind of responding and saying, like, well, maybe he deserves a beat down too, you know the UFC is going to pay attention to that. You know the Korean Zombie is such a fan favorite, and Dana White and the UFC matchmakers love him. So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they scrap that Ortega Korean Zombie fight and maybe give the Korean Zombie Alexander Volkanovski fight. And then you could do Brian Ortega versus Calvin Kattar, which is, again, that fight is an absolute banger. There's a million fights of featherweight to happen, and Max Holloway just happens to be 0-2 against the champion. He's kind of in that no man's land fight right now, but if they announce in a week that Kattar and Holloway are throwing down in the main event of a fight night, I'm going to be excited for it. I still would favor Max Holloway in that fight, but I don't really think the UFC is going to try and pull that fight anytime soon.
Yeah, it's just a tough spot for him to be, but knowing Kattar, like, they could offer him like Edson Barboza, be like, sure, I'll take it. I don't care.
I mean, I'd watch that fight too. Just Edson Barboza is 0-1 in the division, and Calvin Kattar just beat the guy who beat him. So, I guess Josh Emmett's out there, but he had knee surgery or something like that. He had a whole plethora of surgeries. Arnold Allen's undefeated. He already beat Shane Burgos. I mean, Ryan Hall's out there. He has a fight. Sadiq Youssef is out there. There's a million fights for Kattar to take that I would be excited. In terms of matchmaking, if they do Korean Zombie or Alexander Volkanovski Korean Zombie, then it has to be Kattar or Ortega. That'd be the only fight that I think would make sense matchmaking-wise.
I wouldn't hate that fight either. It's that division is so good right now, especially at the top. We're not going to get this thing in line for like another year, 18 months, which is a beautiful thing because you have so many contenders.
I mean, every division between 135 and 170, you can make an argument that there's two or three deserving contenders in each division. I know Aljamain Sterling at 135 is the guy that we all agree with, but for whatever reason, Dana White doesn't want to say anything. And then 145, we just talked about. 155, anyone in the top 10 could fight for a title, and I think we'd all love it. And then 170, we're having this argument between Burns and Edwards over who deserves the next fight, and Covington and Woodley. So 135 to 170, that quote-unquote average-sized man fight weight division is super exciting right now.
Cheap plug, since you said Gilbert Burns, I did speak with him yesterday. So once What the Heck drops later on this morning here on the East Coast, you're going to hear that conversation. It's always great catching up with Dorino. Again, if you're just tuning in, this is the live UFC on ESPN 13 post-fight show on our YouTube page. I am Mike Heck. That is Jose Youngs. And we want to hear from you guys and gals who are watching right now. This is like the A-side after dark. So get those questions and comments in. We'll be happy to talk about all of that stuff. But the co-main event was a lot of fun. Tim Elliott gets a unanimous decision over Ryan Benoit. And I was on the play-by-play duties for the MMA Fighting Twitter page tonight. And I have to say, of all the fights tonight, this one was met with the most controversy in terms of the judging. A lot of people scored this one for Ryan Benoit. What say you, Jose Youngs?
I think it was pretty 50-50. I think I can't remember who I had a score with. I'm not going to lie, because I was doing some other things for the site and it was on. So I would keep looking up. And it seems like every time I would look up, there would be someone was in a precarious situation, whether it be Tim Elliott stuck in like a knee bar or Benoit stuck in a deep guillotine. And they were always defending. So I'm not going to, I can't lie and sit here and say I watched that entire fight scientifically and breaking it down. But at the end of it, I think I was pretty, I wasn't comfortable, but I, in my mind, I was like, I think Benoit won that, but I'm not going to call it a robbery. Like we love calling things on this site. So I don't think it's a robbery. I think in my mind, Benoit probably did enough to win, but I say that with no confidence because I'm not a judge. Tim Elliott, I mean, he was out there. He was going into round two or three. He basically walked out with his back to Ryan Benoit in his weird, awkward stance. I thought he was going to tap to that. What was that? That D bar, that leg lock. Yeah. You could just see the pain on his leg. And then I think it seemed at one point, his game, his veteranship kind of took over where he got that guillotine, he adjusted, he got full mount, and then he escaped the knee bar, but then Benoit also defended that guillotine. So it was a fun scrap. I'm surprised it didn't win fight of the night. That's the fight I watched that I found the most joy in watching, even though I didn't watch super scientifically. But I think Ryan Benoit should have won that one, but I'm not gonna sit here and complain that it was a huge controversial decision.
Yeah, it just depends on like what you favor as a judge, because right. Like I mean, Elliott just is such a weird guy to watch. He just switches stance into so many things. Like I think his finger dislocated on his right hand at one point in the third round. He just kept playing with it, and then he started throwing it. Like the guy is such a wild man.
He's never in a boring fight. I mean, even when he fought Demetrius Johnson, he caught Demetrius Johnson by surprise in that first round. Yeah, Demetrius Johnson ended up dominating by the end of it, but he is at the time the greatest fighter on planet Earth. So it's Tim Elliott's never in a boring fight, but I think I feel for Ryan Benoit. He lost half his paycheck in a fight. A lot of people think he wins. Casey just threw up the scorecards. It looks like the majority of people scored it for Benoit. So I got a feel for fighters like that where they're probably not making a lot to begin with. And every win and loss is huge when you're not in the top 15. So, yeah, you got a feel for Ryan Benoit.
Yeah, I think I see a 30-27 in there. I didn't score 30-27, but it is what it is. 29-28 is close.
Yeah, look, about two-thirds of the journalists had Benoit winning, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a close fight. It was a close fight. A fun fight. I scored a – and for our picks, we do like our little group fight picks thing. That would have been a huge one because I was the only one to pick Benoit, and I was feeling pretty good about it. But, you know, here we go. I lose yet again. But featured bout of the night, then we'll get to the bonuses, then we're going to fire it off to you guys. Jimmy Rivera gets back on track. Mm-hmm. He snaps a two-fight skid against Cody Stamann, wins by unanimous decision against a very tough guy, a surging contender in Cody Stamann. Jimmy Rivera spoke to John Anik after the fight, wasn't thrilled with his performance, but you know, it was his first fight in about 13 months' time, and on top of that, it was like less than 2 weeks' notice to get to Abu Dhabi, double quarantines, and then you have to fight. And you had a performance like that, and you get a win over a surging guy like Stamann. What did you think of Rivera's performance tonight on such short notice like that?
I mean, his takedown defense was unbelievable. It looked like Cody Stamann was going for every round. He was just throwing takedown after takedown after takedown. He'd have that like body lock takedown from behind against the fence where he would just dump Jimmy Rivera down. Jimmy Rivera would pop right back up. So Jimmy Rivera was on defense for I would say a vast majority of those rounds, and he was looking pretty unbelievable. It was hard for him to take down. I wish he had let his hands go a little bit more. It seems like he was finding success with that, but he just wasn't sticking to it. Like he would go from the body to the head and get that hook in the counter, and he was finding success and he was defending all of his takedowns, but he just wasn't letting his hands go. Like he would stuff a takedown and I feel it'd be a perfect time to just explode with Cody Stamann looking frustrated and using all of this energy to try and take it down, and he just didn't. So I know how good Jimmy Rivera is, and he's obviously at one point he had like that super long win streak, beat Uriah Faber, he was on this big tear until he got head kicked by Marlon Moraes. So I wish he got the win. That's the most important thing, getting half of your paycheck, getting the rest of your paycheck, which we're going to talk about for forever, how it's not fair. But Peter Yan was like tweeted a video of him like giving the middle finger. He was responding to Jimmy Rivera's response to his last fight over Jose Aldo. Sugar Sean O'Malley tweeted a bunch of yawn emojis. So a win is a win. That's the most important thing, get paid. But I don't think it did a lot for him in terms of getting a big fight for his next fight, if you know what I mean.
I just don't know what you do here. I mean, I think Rafael Assunção seems like the most logical choice because I don't think those two guys have fought. And I think Assunção is ranked like one spot above Rivera. I mean, there's Dominic Cruz and then there's Corey Sandhagen, but I don't know if that performance merits a fight quite like that. So what would make sense for a Jimmy Rivera as he looks to sort of make up for lost time after missing over a year?
It's hard to say. I would want to see how the UFC would shake out moving forward, because of course Munoz is matched up with Frankie Edgar. Assunção's literally right above him at seven, so I guess that would make sense. Rob Font, Cruz, Dotson has a fight. Sugar Sean has a fight. Merab has a fight. I don't think Song Yadong has a fight, if I remember correctly. And
I don't think
he fought to Cody Stamann to a draw. So if they want to make that fight, I mean, that's a fun fight. But he's, five rankings down from Jimmy Rivera. So Assunção would seem fair. But if Jimmy Rivera wants to just wait and see how the rest of the division plays out, because technically the champion doesn't have a fight booked. Cody Garbrandt doesn't have fight books. Munoz and Edgar, their fight was rebooked. So if you want to see how the rest of the division shakes out, I wouldn't blame him, but Assunção or Song Yadong would be the two that I would pick, just because I don't think Cruz is going to take that fight anytime soon.
Pun completely intended, but it was a heck of a night for the UFC debutants tonight.
We had some
shining performances. I mean, the bonuses themselves. Fight of the night was Abdul Razak Al-Hassan against Munir Lazzez. Al-Hassan missed weight, so he's not eligible. So I wonder if Munir gets 100K, that would be cool. Performances of the night, Lerone Murphy, he looked phenomenal tonight. What a huge win for him over Ramos. And then Khamzat Chimaev, holy cow, what a performance from him. And then Modestus Bukauskas gets a bonus as well with that first round flurry of elbows. Referee stopped the fight. That was kind of a weird ending to that.
Super because weird.
But I honestly, like, even with the door opening and him kind of like stumbling over, I didn't think he was good enough to fight anyways. Like, he took some damage in that round.
I think the only thing would be people complaining. I saw it online, people complaining about the strikes to the back of the head. I don't think that was the case, but he said it. Right, he obviously fell out of the octagon. So it's unfortunate that he was probably on his way to lose to begin with. But the fact that there was some sort of controversy at the end of the day, how do you pronounce his last name? I'm not even going to try.
Bukauskas?
Modestus won. He got the W, got the rest of his paycheck. He gets the bonus. So he got paid. It's just unfortunate that anytime there's controversy, it's unfortunate. But especially that it being his UFC debut, you know, people are going to be like, well, he didn't actually win because of XYZ. Wait till his next fight. So unfortunate that way, but he got a lot of money for his first UFC fight, so I don't think he really cares.
Absolutely. And I thought the production team did a great job going to different angles mm-hmm. on those elbows, because at first I think we were all in agreement, like, those looked a little sketchy. And then as you saw the different angles, you're like, okay, maybe not. Maybe like one or two went to the back of the head, but most of them were legit elbows. Whoa, so
you only need one or two. It's like I got one or two illegal shots to the groin. It only takes one.
That's not the same thing, though.
Oh, elbow to the back of the head? Yes, sir.
Casey, do you even train UFC?
Yeah. Do you UFC, bro? Yeah. Do you even lift, bro? Come on now.
Yeah. I felt that I felt the only mistake was that the ref should have just let the 1 minute run out, the in between rounds, and then if he can get off his stool, ready to fight, then you let him fight. That's all. That was my only issue. It just let his corner pick him up. We've seen that plenty of times where the corner picks him up, carries mm-hmm. him over, and then as soon as the round starts, then you go, are you ready? And then if they're not ready, then you stop the fight. So that's what the minute break is for. You don't have to go to your corner. If you want to sit in the ground and just like, I'm good here, you know, or whatever, you know, it's I mean, it doesn't look good visually, but you know, that's just, you know, you can do that. It's just
what was interesting as well is that they said on the broadcast that they wanted to maybe look at it on replay. They asked the referee if they wanted to check it on a replay, and the referee said, nope, I know what I saw. No need for the replay. So
that's hilarious. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so there you go. So good on Modestus Bukauskas, one of the friendliest guys in the sport, gets his win. Long-awaited debut. He's probably should have got that call a while back, but he's in. The outright signee gets a win. Good night for the debutants. And Lerone Murphy, I know, Jose, you posted that clip, that crazy story of him getting shot in the face and spitting out bullets and then driving himself to the hospital. What a madman. What a breakout performance for him tonight.
Yeah, that just shout out to PG Carroll for that question, because I didn't know that. I think that was before his fight in Abu Dhabi. And I forgot he was even fighting on this card. I love watching him fight. And yeah, that story is insane. He's outside of a barbershop and he's just like, yeah, I was outside of a barbershop and I just kind of got shot in the face and I woke up. I spit the bullets out and just drove to the hospital, and it is what it is. And I was like, it is what it is, man. You got shot in the face, and you're alive. So I tweeted that video, and a lot of people were like, oh, I wish you tweeted this before I made picks, because I would have picked him to win. I have no idea why I thought Ricardo Ramos was going to win by knockout. I just, in the back of my head, his performance at UFC 217 when he had that spinning back fist when he knocked out, was it Farah Zahabi's brother or whatever it was. That's in the back of my mind, and that was the last thing I could really remember. I know he's had a win since then, but yeah, Lerone Murphy, man, what a performance, and good for him. He got a bonus, right?
He got a bonus, got one. Yes.
Yeah, so good on him, man. Beautiful performance.
Yeah, he's gotten like a murderer's row for his first couple of UFC fights. I forget, who the hell did he fight the first time? He shouldn't have. No one thought he was going to win, and then he ended up fighting to a draw. Oh, I think, yeah, it was a tough first round.
Murphy, who was it? Dubai, right?
He was one of the guys that was involved with the brawl. I forget.
Fryer, right? Wasn't that his name?
Yeah, that's who it was. He was like a heavy underdog. I think he was at like a 10-8 first round, then he won the last two, yep. And it ended up being a draw.
Yeah,
good on him.
Yeah, he looked. Actually, that's why I picked him, because I thought he looked so great in his draw the last time we saw him. So, because I know nothing about him other than this whole I got shot in the face and he fought to a draw. So,
yeah, Zubair was his first win. That was a 3-round draw in Abu Dhabi. Mm-hmm. So, 1-0-1 in Abu Dhabi.
Meatball Molly McCann. Mm. That was a surprise. That was a surprising one. Santos did not look good in her earlier fights. Like, she came out the Contender Series. People were like questioning her completely. They're wondering. People were throwing her record out and screenshotting it and putting it on social media. Be like, oh, look at this record that she built. Look at the fighters that she beat to get there. But man, Santos looked fantastic tonight. She looked phenomenal.
Sometimes you get to the UFC and you get that one out of the way and you lose, and then you just reinvent yourself and you come out and win. So yeah, she looked terrible in her first fight, and yeah, I don't want to call her record padded because that's disrespectful. Because how many wins does she have? Like 14 or 15 or something like that.
I think she's 19-1 now.
Yeah, like 19-1, and she had like 19 straight wins before making the UFC. So that's a quote heck of a record to have entering your first UFC fight. So
she did have a very padded record. Her victories were over lots of 0-0s, 3-1s, 0-1s, and a lot of 0-0s. So definitely a padded record. But dude, that looked like, I wasn't even sure that was the same woman tonight. Honestly,
that's what I'm saying. Like, sometimes you just come in,
different fighter. Yeah.
Sometimes you come in and just lose your first UFC fight, and you go back, and you come back, and you get a big performance. You shake the octagon jitters out, and Molly McCann got in her face at the weigh-ins. She tried twice, and Santos just stood there. It's not like she got shook or anything. She's like, okay, we're gonna fight tomorrow. What's your deal, lady? So Santos looked great. She physically looks like she belongs in the division too. Doesn't look like she's a blown-up strawweight. It doesn't look like she's a sucked-out bantamweight. It looks like she's perfect for the flyweight division. So, real impressive performance. I thought Molly was – I didn't think Molly was going to dominate, because Molly's not one of those fighters that goes and just blows the door off you. But she has a good pace, and she has good – I think she had, like, her last fight in Boston. I brought to her attention. She was, like, the first female fighter to have, like – or first or second, have, like, three straight performances with 100-plus significant strikes. And the only other one was like Ioana Andrejczyk and Angela Hill. And Ioana Andrejczyk was like championship fights, and Angela Hill fights like every other day. I thought it would be not an easy win, but I was pretty comfortable picking Molly, and Santos proved me wrong.
Yeah, I especially thought like in the wrestling department, in the ground game, I thought that was going to be Molly's world. But man, Santos got a lot better in that department. We know her Thai background and her striking background, and it's top notch. But I thought Molly would be able to win those exchanges to get it to the ground. And
Santos' last fight was what, January or March 2019, something like that? January, February, March. So it's been more than a year.
Barella, right?
Yeah. So it's been more than a year since she fought. And you have to imagine in those, 14, 15 months, she's just completely worked to get better at her craft, because I'm sure she was embarrassed after coming in with a stellar record and laying an egg in her first performance. So if she really put in the work and came out like that, I don't want to call her a contender right away, but she could pose a lot of problems in that division for sure.
She's very rangy too, and she uses it very well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, she looked great tonight. Let's turn it over to the peeps.
Yeah, let's do that. Hold on one moment. Let's get all our pretty faces up there.
Oh yeah. Of course you're in the middle. What a surprise.
Oh jeez.
Just kidding.
Oh, look at you.
There you go. The man without the mustache.
All right. First question. Oh, it's not a question.
Those are just reactions.
Jessica Crystal Crew is obviously sad because Molly McCann was a proud member of the Crystal Crew. So I'm sure Queen Crystal is very upset right now.
I'm sure Alex Kaylee is watching this right now, laughing away because he thinks it's all a farce. I don't think it is. Although I still haven't gotten my crystals yet from my first appearance on the A-side before I was with MMA Fighting. But that's neither here nor there.
Well, Alex Kaylee hates fun and joy and only sees the colors of gray and black.
Yeah, Canadians.
The reigning Between the Links champion now, Alex Kaylee. B-Roids. Who does Cater match up with best that's ranked higher than him? How do you think Cater matched up against a beat in a 5-round fight? Two questions there. I think we know kind of the answer to the second question. I mean, it happened last year, so things could have changed. But I think most of us feel that if that first fight between Cater and Zabit went 5 rounds, that Cater had the momentum and probably would have done well in 4 and 5. But, gentlemen, I'll pose the question to you. Looking at the guys who are ranked ahead of Calvin Cater right now, who does he match up with pretty well out of those top five?
Well, for Zabit, you also have to remember that he went from fighting Zabit in Boston to all of a sudden getting pulled from that card. So Cater's from New England. He's going to fight Zabit in his backyard, to all of a sudden getting the fight pushed back to fighting in Zabit's backyard in Russia, and then getting elevated to a 3-round main event after Junior Dos Santos pulls out. So that's a lot of things going on in that fight. So, yeah, I would love to see that fight run back in 5 rounds. I think he'd do pretty well against Ortega. Ortega obviously got pieced up by Max on the feet. So if Cater can keep the fight standing, which is, of course, no easy task against a fighter like Ortega, because even if you do keep the fight standing, Ortega can just snatch up that neck like he did to Cub Swanson with that standing guillotine. So I think he could do pretty well against Ortega. Yair is a very similar fighter to Zabit. And then I'd favor Holloway against him. And then Chan Sung Jung is an anomaly. You can't really predict what kind of fight you're going to have with him. So I think he matches up well with anyone in the top five, top six, whatever he's ranked. But I don't think I'd favor him heavily against anyone, but I think he'd have a good shot at beating Ortega or Yair for sure.
I thought Cater Yair was like the fight to make after 249. Like after Cater knocked out Jeremy Stephens, I felt like that was the obvious fight to make. But
I agree, but Yair and Zabit have had history for a long time. And I really want just a long, rangy, spinning shit style fight between this crazy Mexican and this crazy Russian just throwing down for 5 rounds.
Can't argue with that logic, Casey. Jose, Casey, your thoughts on those questions? My bad.
Jeez. No, I think Cater for me right now is like, he's clearly to me a B+ A-level featherweight in the world right now, but I just, against the guys ahead of him, I just don't see him. The question was, what was the question? Like, who do we see him like in a favorable matchup? I just don't see him beating anyone in front of him. And if he does, good on him. But like, I just see everyone looks just slightly better than him that are ranked in front of him. So I don't know. I like the Yair fight the best of all the people in front. I think Yair is the most entertaining, fun matchup. But Cater against any of the top guys, I think he's just an entertaining fighter, so no matter what.
Yeah, I don't know if he beats, because I just pulled up the ring, he's 6 after this fight, and then above him in order would be Yair, Korean Zombie, Brian Ortega, Zabit, Holloway, and Volkanovski.
It's crazy.
I don't think I would favor him in any of those fights, betting-wise, but I think if you're going to put money on him pulling out an upset, I'd probably put Ortega. Maybe Yair would be the two I would pick. I would say Calvin would have a good chance of pulling off the quote unquote upset.
I think the biggest upset would probably be Ortega, only because he's been out for such a long time.
Yeah, so, that's what I'm saying. Like, if they fought in October and a Calvin Kattar beat Brian Ortega, I wouldn't be shocked. I would still favor Brian Ortega entering that fight. But Kattar's boxing is unbelievable, and that's exactly how Max Holloway beat Brian Ortega last time. He just kept it off the octagon canvas and just pieced him up on the feet. And you just saw Calvin Kattar's output is unbelievable, and he really knows how to control his energy levels through five rounds. I think if he beat Brian Ortega, it wouldn't be a surprise to me.
And Kattar's takedown defense is really good. It's phenomenal. And if you're fighting Kattar and you end up on your back, you're going to get cracked really hard. So
he was throwing those haymakers. What was Ige was like 0 for 7, 0 for 8, something like that. But you also have to wonder, like, Dan Ige is not the biggest featherweight in the world. Like, if Dan Ige announced he was cutting down to 135, I would be like, yeah, okay, you're not that tall. So, like, you could probably make it. So you do have to wonder if fighters like the Yair Rodriguez and then there's the beats that are super rangy and can keep Calvin from boxing would play a major factor. Because who else has he lost to besides to beat Moicano, right? And Moicano is good stand-up, good grappling. What was it? It was like – that was in Anaheim, I think, or I can't quite remember. So you just have to wonder what type of fighters – Calvin would present Calvin with the most problems.
Good problems to have.
Right.
All those matches would be fun. What else we got? Thank you, B-Roids.
Let me look.
Got great pictures of dogs with Christmas hats on. Would anybody be shocked if Calvin got a title shot depending on when Alex comes back? Yes, I would say... Go ahead. Yeah, you go first.
I would be surprised if he skipped the line, but I wouldn't. It's not because Volkanovski would say yes over someone else. If they took Calvin Kattar's name to Alexander Volkanovski first, Alexander Volkanovski is gonna be like, no, he has to have another fight. Like Volkanovski is gonna fight whoever they put in front of him. He's one of those champions, and he's gonna fight Calvin eventually, I think, because if Volkanovski really wants to be the quote unquote goat and run through the gambit of fighters. It's only a matter of time before they make that fight. I think the only way they would make the Kattar fight is if fighters can't leave certain countries or matchmaking-wise, someone gets hurt. Like if Ortega's ready to go and they make that Korean Zombie fight, Zabit's fighting Yair, or they don't make that fight or make that fight, and Calvin's just next in line, processed by elimination, sure. But if they skip Zabit, Ortega, Korean Zombie, and Yair to go to Kattar to fight Volkanovski on purpose, that would surprise me.
If Kattar went out there and like blasted Dan Ige and finished him in the first two rounds, like did what he did to Jeremy Stephens to Dan Ige tonight, I'm not saying it would happen, but there would have been a chance of it because people would have been clamoring for it.
If Kattar went out there and just Shane Burgos'd him like he did to Shane Burgos at UFC 220 and then took the mic and he's like, that's how a featherweight finishes fights, and then throws the mic down and leaves the octagon. Yeah, that fight is 100% the fight to make, but that's not what happened.
Yeah. You know, there you go. I'd be shocked if Kattar got the shot. I'd love to see it, but I'd be shocked if he did.
If they purposely skipped the top five to go to him, I'd be a little surprised.
Casey, your thoughts?
I want to see other fights for Max Holloway, but in my mind, Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar is pretty dang awesome. Because I think that's what Kattar is missing right now in his resume. He's beaten good fighters. But not the fighters that we consider you have to beat this guy if you want to fight for the belt. And so I think I think that's the problem where Kattar's at right now. He's just beating all the guys he's supposed to beat. But
it's really unfortunate that Josh Emmett is hurt, because I think that'd be a good fight because they're ranked right there. They would be, because Frankie Edgar is, I'm eliminating as he's sitting at 7. So it would be 7 and 6, Kattar and Emmett. Because I don't think they're going to give Kattar Max, because Max is already 0-2 against the champion. I don't think they want to knock off a future contender, especially if Max goes out there and just blows him away.
Yeah, I just don't think the fight's going to happen, but I just want to see it. Yeah,
I agree. So it's just for if Emmett hadn't gone under surgery, I think Emmett Kattar's the fight to make, but that's not going to happen.
Actually, now let's talk about the other guy.
What's next for Ige? You can do a lot of things with Dan Ige. What about Ige versus Burgos?
I love it. I love that fight. There's an Arnold Allen doesn't fight either, right? You might give him a fight. Sadiq Youssef, Ryan Hall. Oh, no, Ryan Hall's fighting Lamas. Give him the winner of that fight, the loser, whatever, one of those fights. If Jose Aldo wants to jump back up to featherweight, that'd be a fun fight too. So, yeah, again, Dan Ige didn't lose anything in the eyes of the fans, I think, after that win, after that loss.
Yeah, there's a lot of good fights for Ige, honestly. I think
I like the Burgos fight a lot.
I think that's the fight.
Or Jeremy Stephens, they're sitting at 9-10. Yeah. I know Jeremy Stephens is fawning everyone, but Ige Jeremy Stephens would be a banger too.
Yeah, you got, I mean, there's so many.
Or Burgos versus Stephens. That's the beauty of having a Jeremy Stephens there. So you can fight any of these guys, and it's fun.
Got it.
What else we got?
Has Andre Feely been booked?
Rumored to fight Bryce Mitchell from what I heard, but that's not official.
Yeah, nothing official, but those are the rumblings in the street right now.
And they both tweeted, give me the contract, like with our graphic. Like Andre Feely goes, I want to fight Bryce Mitchell. And I made a graphic out of it. And then Bryce Mitchell was like, done, give me the contract. And I was like, all right, there's the fight.
That's what happened with the Rosa fight too. Exactly the same thing.
Right.
So Bryce Mitchell did say he has contract is signed, and he's got fight news coming. So I've been trying to work on it. I assume it's Feely, but I don't know.
They both want to fight each other. They're both not ranked. They're both awesome, interesting characters, and I think that's the fight to make. So,
and the winner gets in the top 15.
100%. Ige versus Stevens, Burgos, Sadiq Youssef, any of those cats, I'll watch them fight.
Let's
talk about this gentleman.
Munir Laz is the real MVP. Yes. He was awesome. And the post fight was great. It was like the calmest call out of Mike Perry you will ever hear in the UFC.
Yeah. It was so quiet. I was like, wait, did he just say Mike Perry? I wasn't sure, actually.
If you watch the post fight press conference that Guillerme sent over when he was back there, they asked him, like, why do you want to fight Mike Perry? And he said that he wants to fight because him and his teammate Darren Till have issues. And if you have issues with one of us, you have issues with all of us. And Mike Perry and Darren Till are obviously not in the same weight class. So if how you pronounce his last name? If he wants to fight Mike Perry, and Mike Perry, whenever he returns from whatever he's going on with his blonde, friendly hair, I'm just going to put it out there. Why not? Did you see that photo, Casey?
I saw that photo.
Guy calls my hair friendly and makes fun of me, and all of a sudden he has the same hair as me.
Hair. That was very friendly. Right?
Maybe he wants to be on the A side with you, Jose.
I don't think he does.
Trying to butter you up.
I truly do not think he wants to be on the A side with me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like the call out. It got attention. It got buzz. It probably won't happen anytime soon.
Definitely not.
That guy against anybody at 170 makes me happy.
Yeah, I think you give him someone like kind of right outside the top 15, maybe a Bilal Muhammad, someone like that. I think that's an exciting fight. I'm just happy he's on the UFC roster, and he's obviously a super action fighter. And so many knees and elbows, so many knees and elbows. I loved it. Those step in knees. Ugh.
He's got a chin on him too. Yeah. Holy cow! He took some big shots early.
He let what was his opponent's name? I haven't said his name out loud in a while.
Abdul Razak Al-Hassan.
Al-Hassan, yeah, I picked Hassan first round knockout. I thought this was a showcase fight for Hassan. I thought they beat him a local, you know, but nope. That man is legit.
So I'm just pulling up the UFC welterweight rankings right now. Fights that I would like to see him fight that wouldn't be in the top 15. I'll watch him fight Nico Price.
Yeah, Nico Price.
I'll watch him fight Mike Perry, Bilal Muhammad, Jake Matthews, Dalby, Cowboy Oliveira would be a banger. Cowboy would be a banger.
The Leech
would be awesome. Gunnar Nelson, Rocco Martin, Vicente Luque already has a fight, obviously. So yeah, there's a million fights. For Lazez to take, but he's 1-0 in the UFC, something like that. So I don't think he's going to get any huge names right away.
Yeah, and he just beat a guy who hasn't fought in, 2 years?
Yeah.
UFC 220 was the last time he fought, right?
That is true. So yeah, I don't think he's going to get a major fight anytime soon.
I don't think there's a need to.
How about Alan Joban? There you go. There's a fight.
He fought?
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's not in boring fights. He's a primarily a striker. So Alan Joban versus Lazez would be a fun fight. He has a win over Mike Perry. You beat him. That's another notch that you can just jump on that Mike Perry train to fight. So Joban, there's the fight.
Joban. Nico Price is probably my 1B. That's fun.
Diego Sanchez would be a weird fight too.
Oh man.
Yeah, that's the beauty of him, man. Like, you can put him in pretty much anywhere, and like just you know, he's awesome. I was just
you could slow roll him too. Yeah. Just slow roll him and just let him keep putting on highlight reels.
Well, let's answer a couple more questions before we. You okay? You okay, Mike? Is that fly getting you?
Friggin' fly. Fly. I told my kid, shut the door. Don't leave it open. Of course, he opens the door and won't shut it.
What's the school situation out there?
Nothing's been determined yet, but they're thinking that they might be able to get back in September, mm-hmm. but the kids are going to have to wear masks in the classroom. We'll see. I don't buy it, but we'll see what happens. I hope it happens. I love my kid, but I've spent way too much time with him.
Just a lot of comments about the fights. Step in elbows. Tonight was a great night of fights. I think everyone's just kind of sleepy.
Yeah,
I mean, these Wednesday nights are weird. I feel for Gi.
Yeah, that's one. Even though it's not about tonight's card, I just got to talk about her.
Can we all agree that Amanda Ribas is the next female superstar? I mean, she was the only VIP that got featured on the broadcast tonight. But yes, she is. Why do you think she got the Paige fight to begin with? It went exactly the way that Dana White wanted it to go. That's why she got the VIP seat. They sent Paige off to Bellator or wherever she's going to end up going. Amanda Ribas gets a big boost because she beats a big star. And the sky's the limit for her. There's lots of great options for her. Moving on.
Let's talk about, who are Amanda Ribas' last two wins? Paige VanZant and Mackenzie Dern. Two of the most popular female fighters on the roster. They might not be the championship-level caliber fighters, but in terms of people tuning in and knowing names, it's those two are the two of the biggest names out there, probably Macy Barber at one point, too. So, yeah, Amanda Ribas deserves a huge step up in competition. She called out the winner of Esparza, Marina Rodriguez. I want that fight. I think Marina Rodriguez is an awesome fighter. I think she is super violent. Carlos Esparza is super difficult to fight and makes people fight badly. And I think that is a talent to have, that she completely takes you out of the fights that you shine in. So if Marina Rodriguez somehow gets past Carlos Esparza, Amanda Ribas versus Marina Rodriguez is just a violent female strawweight fight, and I want to see that fight so badly.
I want to see it. I don't want to see it right now, though. I don't. Slow roll her. Like, give her a big fight. Give her a step up. But we don't need to push her up that high yet. Felice Herrig's fighting. Who's Felice Herrig fighting?
I don't even know.
John Aroba?
Sure. You could be making that up, and I would believe you.
Oh, yeah. There's so many good
guys. Yeah, I think the winner of that fight. So they'll be like right around the same place.
What about Tisha Torres is right above her?
I think they train together, don't they?
She's ATT.
They're both ATT, right. Yeah. I saw that a lot on Twitter, and I was I don't think they fight each other.
Angela Hill and Michelle Watterson are fighting.
Not a bad one.
Who's Mizuki Inoue fighting? She has a fight coming up. Amanda Lemos. I'm not sure
Yan Zhao Nan is fighting Claudia. The winner of that, too, could be a banger of a fight. Strawweight is the best, I think, the most stacked female division out there.
That's not even up for debate.
It's the most competitive, too. Nina is off the list. She's pregnant. Rose is probably fighting Zhang Weili. Andrade, who knows? Rematch her against Joanna if they want. Tatiana's, who knows? Nina's out. Claudia has a fight book. Sparta's a fight book. Michelle Waters has a fight book. Marina, Jan, Tisha Torres. Alexa Grasso's not in the division anymore. Angela Hill's a fight. Felicia Herrig has a fight. So, she's going to have to wait for something. You can't book her a fight right now without a bunch of fights happening already.
Yeah. I think the opponent, the opponent matters, but I think the placement on the card matters even more. Yeah. Like,
she's going to get
a main event on a fight night, definitely on a main card of a big pay-per-view. Like, just keep featuring her and throwing her out with as many eyeballs that can watch her as possible.
And the amazing thing about, she has two weight classes you can fight. She doesn't get a strawweight fight, and she goes, all right, fine, I'll fight a flyweight. Like, I'm not going to say no to watching her fight anybody at flyweight either. She's obviously not the size of that weight class, and eventually she could bulk up to do it because she does want to be champ eventually. But there's a million fights I'd watch her at flyweight too. But if she wants to take a strawweight, she's going to have to wait for a lot of these fights to pan out first.
I would agree with that 100%. looking forward to seeing more from Amanda Ribas. I think we can all agree with that.
I can't wait to see the lap.
There's so many, many good straw weights right now. Just so many.
But the answer to that question is yes, she is the next potential big female MMA superstar. I would have to agree with that. Anything else in the truck, Casey?
No, just a couple people. You know, Danny Gage should try 35, maybe.
He's not the biggest guy at 145.
Yeah, we stand next to him. You know, out of fight camps, he just doesn't seem that big.
Like, even when he fought Bektik, when we were at that Houston card, Casey, and Bektik stood on the face-off and, like, lifted his shirt up, and Dan Ige lifted his shirt off to play along, I'm like, Bektik looks like a whole other weight class than Dan Ige. But Dan Ige, again, it's like when we talked to Michael Chiesa in Edmonton, Casey, and we were like, why did you ever fight at lightweight if you're this good at welterweight? He goes, because I was doing well. If you're ranked in the top 7, you don't want to restart. So if he doesn't want to restart, put all this work at featherweight, like, why not? But he would be dropping down. Michael Chiesa went up. So that's what everyone's going to say. So then he can do whatever he wants.
All right. Great. And let's talk one question. Take one question about Saturday.
Looking forward, does Joseph Benavidez get it done? I don't know.
Let's see if Figueiredo makes weight.
Well, according to our video that Guy shot, that he was like 130 pounds landing.
Is that what he said? Was he on a scale?
That is what he said. I'm just telling you what he said.
Yeah, all right.
If he truly is 130, he makes 125 comfortably. That's another conversation we can have later. But it's a tough fight. I still favor Joe B. I think he was winning that fight until they clashed heads.
Yeah.
But Figueiredo hits so hard, and he's only lost to Formiga. Who's pretty much beaten everyone outside of like the top three. So,
except for Joe B
and Alex Perez most recently. So it's a tough fight, real tough fight.
I hope that fight gets a lot more buzz. I hope.
So do I.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that fight. And one more comment before we get our everything else done in our lives.
And let's be honest, by the way, with Figueiredo, he lost to Jared Brooks too. Let's throw that out there. Even though the judges were terrible that night, he lost the fight. Question for Jose. Remember when you called Niall a human-sized onion?
Yeah, I do, because it only happened a couple hours ago. His child, Niall McGrath, keeps going blah, 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 blah. He keeps talking and talking and talking, and he's bad at it. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't know anything about nothing. So if he wants to flap his gums, come up with something original. I don't know if you saw John Anik was asking for suggestions on a new tattoo he wants to get. Did you see this? Either of you guys?
No, I saw that tweet.
Because John Anik's going to get a game bread tattoo, and then he might get the FE for Frankie Edgar. And he's like, what else should I get? And I suggested a very tasteful, massive back piece of me dunking a basketball on Niall. I figure a full back piece would be most appropriate. And John Anik was like, yeah, duh. And everyone was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I was like, it does make a lot of sense to see a bag of soup getting dunked on by me, Jose Young. So make it happen, John Anik.
I mean, who wouldn't want? You should IG live that tattoo being made.
I mean, if we want to start a crowdfunding for John Anik to get a big back piece with me dunking on Niall McGrath and Pete Carroll fainting in the background, who's going to argue that? No one.
Jeez. I mean, what a good way to end the show, right?
There you go.
Trash Niall where he can't defend himself. But that's all right. This rivalry is
going on
forever.
How would he defend
himself?
There's no
like, maybe he's watching right now and he wants to chime in.
I definitely think he's not watching.
Future Between the Links matchup, perhaps. We could settle it in there.
No, if we're ever going to match up, it'll never be through a computer.
5-foot rims.
50-foot rims, more like it. Don't worry. Even if it was a 5-foot rim, now I wouldn't be able to reach, man. He gets tired just balling his fist up into a fist.
All right. Wow. I have to see this. I think this is a perfect way to end it. So, that's it. The night is in the books. Our second of four Fight Island cards. It's a wrap. We're back at it again on Saturday with the aforementioned flyweight title fight, Joseph Benavidez versus Davison Figueiredo. We got Kelvin Gastelum on that card as well.
Yes.
Oh, that fight is so good.
That's a good fight.
Jack Hermanson, is so good.
That's a good one. And then, of course, next Saturday, that's the one that I think everyone's really looking forward to with Darren Till versus Robert Whittaker, and that whole chaotic card from top to bottom is going to be a lot of fun. So that's it. That's all we have to say. So Stick with us at MMA Fighting for all the coverage. We'll have virtual media day, I believe, tomorrow. And then we got weigh-ins on Friday, and we get the card on Saturday. What the heck's going to drop in around 7.5 hours from right now, which should be a good one with Gilbert Burns and Devontae Smith and Rob Font and John Castaneda, the newest member of the UFC Bantamweight division. He'll be fighting Nathaniel Wood next Saturday on that July 25th card. So for Jose Youngs, Casey Lydon in the truck, Esther Lynn on the graphics, I am Mike Heck. Hope you guys enjoy the fight tonight. We'll see ya. Godspeed. Good night.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.